It is March the 9th, 2024. My name is Chris, and this is The Future of Photography.
The Future of Photography.
Hey, how's it going, Jeremiah?
Good, good. I was almost tempted to do this experiment where I'd wear my goggles and see and do this in a persona version, but I'll leave that for another week to see if that's possible. I don't know if...
So, okay. Before we dive into today's topic, and by the way, Adrian not here today, as you noticed. He'll be back soon. So just before we dive into today's topic, which is not about the Vision Pro at all, but... So I've seen other people I haven't had a conference with anyone wearing them and using their persona, which is this fake 3D scanned kind of version of them. But I guess you have done that with others that have these.
I have.
If you look at this persona thing just on a YouTube video, it's quite uncanny, quite eerie. What is it like after like 20 minutes? Because I hear that people say, yeah, sure, now it goes away, it just becomes normal.
Couldn't last 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, it's very disconcerting, and you know that, you know they're working on, in fact, I think they just issued an update this week to improve it. But there's a lot of room for improvement.
We have to agree. The Vision Pro is at this point probably as bad as it'll ever be. It only become better over
yes.
time.
Yes, in other words, it's a dazzling piece of technology, but it doesn't have some. It does have some shortcomings.
Sure,
there's kludges around it. I mean, I'm interested to see if I can create. Obviously, I can create an avatar of myself that's pretty good, pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. And can I import that and animate it using the Apple API so I have a little more control over it? I don't know.
We'll soon have a virtual version of you on the podcast that is fully automated by an AI.
Sure.
And
voice
sure.
too. Anyway, let's plunge into our topic.
All right.
Today.
I woke up this morning to the news that Nikon bought Red. I don't know when that happened. Probably in the last few days that
yes.
it was announced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Red is okay. Let's just take this step by step. First of all, Nikon, whichever way you want to pronounce it, we know that company. Red might not be that well known to some of the listeners, so let's just go into that. Red was founded in 2005 by the previous owner or founder of Oakley, the guy with the sunglasses. Jim Jannert is his name. And they have been this Silicon Valley startup that started making movie cameras, as in very highly modular cameras where you would like piece together the back and the storage. And
Call it what it really was, a computer that has a lens on the front
right.
and storage on the back.
Okay, so Nikon bought these guys, and of course, Nikon for a while has been this, for me at least, in my perception, has been this company that was almost a bit on the way out. No innovation, no new stuff, and I think this is going to change a few things. So,
boy, do we disagree on this. 100%.
Do we?
Yeah.
Do we? Okay. Let's see. So my thinking is, if we look at the movie industry, there's one big company for filming. That's Ari. Ari is the big one. Is that correct?
It is. So Sony is making big headway,
right?
In terms of quality, but you know, no one will ever bat an eyelash when you go, now we're going to shoot this on an Arri.
So Arri, they have the info, they have the gear, they have the lenses, they have the light, they have the network, they have the service. So if you want to do a production, typically you do not buy cameras, you rent them. So you would someone from Arri would bring the cameras to your set. So
well,
it's a
well, I mean a version of that. I mean,
or a version of that. So the other company that's not in the film, in the movie business, but is kind of, is Canon, because a lot of Canon lenses are being used, as far as I know. Nikon hasn't been in that field at all.
I would say, having been a user of both of these cameras, as mm-hmm. well as Ari's, I have some kind of deep felt, both on the kind of knee-jerk emotional reaction to these companies and the practical application of these companies, mm-hmm. and a knowledge of what happens when two companies with very distinct DNA merge.
So we are probably going to see a culture clash here.
I believe we're going to see a massive culture
clash. We have the traditional Japanese company, and then we have the California startup.
You know, Red is a company that totally upended the cinematic approach to making TV and film. Mm-hmm. When they first introduced their cameras, it was, I mean, and we were very, big surprise, early adopters. and I remember I was working on a show where we changed 1 year from an Arri to a Red, because the cinematographer was very dazzled by the, I think it was, we were working in 4K, and it was amazing. The Arri has been a traditional and very AC, assistant cameraman, supported machine. In other words, when you're on set, there's an intuitive aspect for the assistant cameraman who is responsible for, you know, changing lenses, adopting, adjusting the parameters and follow focus, etc. And Arri's just, nobody gave it a second thought in terms of its practical use on set.
And everyone had knowledge of how to operate an Arri. That's just,
yeah. And they made a beautiful transition, I believe, from film to digital. And as the chips became more robust, the quality improved, etc. Plus, the operating system was, again, very friendly. And Arri also, I think, and I could be very, very mistaken, but I believe they made the last film camera, I think it was called a 416. It was a 16mm camera with very, very quick-changing magazines. It felt like a digital camera, only the capture was on film, and it was designed for recording only, really. So you recorded, you digitized, and you finished on electronic media, and that was it. And it was a fantastic camera. I did a movie. I wanted more grain in the movie, natural grain, and so I shot it with it. And it was just a great experience. And that was probably the last time I used film to shoot. That's Arri's position there. Red came into the industry with the passion of Oakley mm-hmm. to create something special. I mean, in a way, it was that Steve Jobs vibe. I'm going to upend the computer business. I'm going to make something so different, so high quality, you know, hang the expense. I'm just going to do it, but I'm going to try to make it really affordable. And that's what they did. And having used all the Reds, you know, from its first iteration, it was a very cumbersome proposition for the ACs, to put it mildly, because, as I mentioned, it was a computer with a lens. You had to kludge a lot of things. It was not the fastest thing to kind of set up and tweak. However, the quality of the images just blew everybody away. So you had this is a hassle, you know, running and gunning with the early Reds was something you would never conceive of.
Yeah.
But the quality of the imagery was spectacular. And so it came out of passion, and they established great relationships with DPs. They brought them in, the interaction, the evolution of the company was very geared towards the industry. And also they were not shy about saying, no, take it on a photo shoot. The quality is so good, you could hose a sequence down, choose a frame, and it would be beautiful. And it was. So their innovation and their focus was really, really a welcoming adjunct to the film business. And it really upended everyone, including Sony Panavision, Arri itself. Everyone went, oh my God, we've got to now compete with that. And that started a race to the top in terms of quality and ease of use.
So it gave the big, the Arris and the others a well-needed competition.
Not unlike Tesla, for example. Yeah. When Tesla came in, all the other car companies went, oh, man, we better get on this bandwagon. And, you know, and they did. And I think the influence of Tesla is far beyond its own cars, but more towards others.
So is it still that way? Because Arri is now almost 20 years old. So is it an established player? Has everyone arranged themselves with Red?
No. Now I think things have become quite. We'll call it. It just depends on the look you're going for. Like every chip of a cinema. Digital cinema camera is like a different film stock. That's how I would relate to it. So chip A from Sony with skin tones and color and whatnot, the logs that they use is a little bit different than Red, a little bit of the Arri and Panavision, etc., which uses Sony. All of these chips give a slightly different feel. Now we're all working in the same kind of space of 4K or 8K or 6K. And these are, I think those innovations are great because then it becomes subjective and you can choose the cameras you want. Lenses, they all use the same lenses. And there's a, you know, whether it's Cook or Leitz or Sony or, you know what I mean? I mean, the lens qualities now are, again, it's very subjective. Sometimes you want razor sharp. And
the lenses, I think the mount that is in use all across the industry is the PL mount. And lenses by whoever, Canon and so on, are being adapted to the PL mount.
Anybody who's in the glass business has to adapt if they want to be in the cinema. So that's the influence of Red. Innovative, interesting, not always perfect, but driving the industry forward. Now let's talk about Nikon. As a ex-commercial photographer, generally for kind of more formal work, I would use Hasselblad. But on my kind of run and gun, easy on the street, that kind of thing, I used Nikon. Mm-hmm. And I was an avid Nikon user. I had an F, an F1, an F2, motorized, you name it. I still have a bevy of great Nikon lenses, in my closet. So I was a fully throated advocate of Nikon when I was a photographer. They seem to be very advanced in pushing the limits. And it was only Canon when Canon first came out that they started to push Nikon forward. And that became the back and forth in the still company. But Nikon reminds me of Nokia, who were very, very innovative at the beginning, but the size of the company, the DNA of the company was such that I never felt that they were very innovative. And slowly they became a laggard in terms of photograph quality. You had companies like Lumix, Panavision, Panasonic, Lumix, Canon, of course, really driving forward. Those two really, really kind of pushed everything. And I started to feel on every level, whether it's kind of a point and shoot camera or professional grade cameras, their lenses and their operating system and their cameras themselves were not as interesting as Canon. And when you have a company that is a non-innovative company with the DNA as such, just relying on their brand, as it were, combining with a company whose DNA is complete innovation, hang the expense in many ways, we want this to be the best, you have a clash of cultures. And I feel because of the size of Nikon, they are going to, they need it for their own PR, for their own presentation of being, quote, an advanced company. But I feel that the DNA of these companies are so different that I don't believe we're going to see any real innovation coming forth. And I actually think that they may destroy the innovation that Red has always represented.
Unless Red, unless they leave it alone and just own a few things. I have three things I want to talk about. The first is the patents that Red has on the Red RAW format. Mm-hmm. So that has become a pretty important codec to compress, to RAW compress the footage. Huge files. They have this like really interesting proxy system and so on. And the other companies don't really have that. The only company that made a deal, a patent deal of some sort, a licensing deal with Red was Nikon. They had it in the, I think, Z8 RAW video based on the Red RAW format. Is that something that you think might be why Nikon bought them?
I can only think that the reason they bought them is for out of a desperate need for an innovative group to come in and light a fire under their own. That's the only reason. Because codecs now are
fresh blood.
Say, yeah, it's a dime a dozen. In other words, you know, I like my codec better than your codec.
Well, you know, the other thing is that that Nikon has always been kind of dependent on Sony for their sensors.
Yeah.
Nikon's use Sony, most of them use Sony sensors, and Red makes their own sensors. They have an 8K global shutter sensor, and global shutter is, you remember, just a few months ago, global shutter is an important thing, and
yeah,
you have to buy that from Sony if you want it at this point. So yeah, they are buying technology here.
I mean, talent. My feeling is that the company that's been consistently innovative on the lenses and chips is Sony. Their work is kind of
undoubtedly the best at this point. Yeah,
yeah, and so I think maybe, and again, I'm speculating that Nikon saw this as an opportunity to go head to head against Sony because they were losing ground, certainly in the cinema area. Nobody really talks about Nikon at all. And I don't think even in still photography. I mean, what Nikon has is a brand, the ability to advertise, a history of very, very good products, solid. But if you start at point-and-shoot cameras to prosumers to professional, both lenses, bodies, and then into cinema, you know, Nikon is never on the tip of your tongue when you're talking about these hardware or software solutions. Red has always been on the tip of one's tongue when talking about that. So I can't see, unless Red's profit margin was spectacular, And I have a feeling, again, this is a feeling, I don't know anything about the internal economics of these companies, but maybe Red needed a big cash infusion in order to step up, and that would be Nikon.
Because it takes two, right? It takes a company that needs something, and it takes another company that needs something, and then you turn this into a win-win. Yeah.
Now, but again, I think, you know, we've seen companies with distinctly different DNAs in terms of their where the company came from, what the sensibility is from the top, and I see them as very opposite kind of companies.
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. Now, of course, what I also think is that they did well. Okay, two ways this could have gone. First is, of course, they have talked about this, about the different cultures. That is pretty obvious. They had to. Or it was so much money on the table that they couldn't argue. It was like, okay, that's it. We're out.
There's another scenario where Red said, oh, I see. They'll buy us, but we'll eat them from within. In other words, they may have a plan to completely take over the culture of Nikon and make it really innovative.
Okay, so
ask me if I believe that.
Right. I think this
that's the optimist view.
I think this is pretty far-fetched. Looking at what I know about, what I think I know about Japanese corporate culture, there's no way that's well, maybe they'll try. I mean, they have been bold from the start, so
you could look at the history of Japanese companies buying American companies. And, you know, whether it's a film studio or a car company, whatever it is, I'm not sure that the success has always been at the forefront of these business decisions. They felt good initially. They felt exciting. There was a good press release. But when push comes to shove, I mean, what does Nikon need to do in the market to excite people like you and I, Chris? What can they do? I mean, when there is a new Red, I'm interested in reading all about it. When Sony comes out with a new lens, a faster lens, you know, if they introduce, say, a 0.95 equivalent, you know, cinema lens that was just very narrow depth of field with autofocus and all of that, so you can hold a narrow depth of field shot in a moving shot, that would be exciting. That would be innovative. But when has Nikon, the last 20 years, come up with a product, still photograph, lens, or software that really lit a fire with creative people worldwide? I can't remember.
Yep, I can't either.
No, so. And you're talking to we're people who like will dig for this information.
I mean, the thing is, Nikon has quite a stellar reputation when it comes to quality, to image quality. For example, I remember that was in the DSLR days, like 5D Mark II, Canon 5D Mark II, and up, where all the Nikons that I saw around me on different like photo tours and so on, always had just that little bit of additional crispness and nicer colors and things. But you would look around on the statistics and say, okay, Canon is the leader in numbers. Yeah. So, but they do have a reputation, and maybe they are, as you said, maybe they're trying to reinvigorate their innovative side.
On the other hand, I mean, one could argue that, you know, Nikon and Canon, in terms of the still market, certainly when it comes to film photography, are completely equivalent. I, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, apples or oranges, whatever you like. I think it becomes a little bit more cloudy when you start to think about cinematic approach. Nikon is not known for moving pictures and digital innovation.
Well, maybe they will turn into a powerhouse.
Yes. The question is how? Possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's everything. Most of it is speculation at this point.
Yeah. It's all execution. I'm fascinated by, and in a way, a little disappointed because the startup that Red was always came out of a man who I thought just wanted to upset the industry and push it, you know, hang the expense. Let's make a camera, even if we make a very little bit of money on it, that is transformative. I don't see that happening in Nikon. It's going to be back to the number crunchers. And I fear that they're going to acquire the Kodaks. They're going to acquire, you know, the IP. And then they're going to try and integrate that maybe into their still system. That would make sense. And come up with something that could be marketed fine. The question is, will they be able to regain a position that puts them ahead of Sony, for example, whose quality is, I mean, as anybody listening to this podcast know that I'm a Leica shooter with cameras, but I've shot a lot with Panasonic Lumix and Sony's. The qualities are just, they're spectacular. They're really, really great. And Sony in particular, my beef with Sony is always on the operating system and the kind of engineering that needs to happen when you're in the field. You know, I like a more analog approach. Maybe it's because of my age or how I learned photography, but I like the tactile feel of it. It's the same thing when I drive our Tesla. One of my beefs about Tesla, and I do like my car, but the screen and the, you know, it, there's not enough.
You're missing the dials and the buttons.
Yes, I don't want to take my, you know, if I'm traveling 70 miles an hour on a highway, I don't want to start looking at a TV screen to turn on my windshield wipers, right? I want the buttons.
For that, you do have a button. You might not have found it just yet.
It's my mouth.
All right. So, probably not much we can speculate about where this will go. I think time will have to tell. The culture clash, I can totally see that. Yes, absolutely. So I think it's still exciting. Things are happening. Things are moving. And maybe that will make space for another Red to come up in the future.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that there's always the law of unintended consequences here. And something that we can't even speculate on may come out of this.
I mean, there's one example is Kronos. Kronos is a camera, a high-speed camera made by a guy in his, like, or used to be made by a guy with a community around it, a tinkerer, a really good one at that. And he started looking at the Phantoms and so on, the ones that go tens of thousands of frames or hundreds of thousands of frames per second. Yeah. And he built one of that in a form factor of a DSLR, like small, handy. And he, I think, started with something like a few hundred frames and now he's up to like tens of thousands of frames per second. And that became very popular in circles, like in YouTuber circles. There's a lot of people on YouTube of these makers who now have access to a high speed camera that costs a fraction of the big Phantoms. So maybe something like that will happen again and take the industry from a different angle. So
sure, I think that that's possible.
Especially in days like these, where a lot of people learn a lot of things very fast, especially in like the electronics field and in the general maker field. So
sure, I think also every time a new chip design comes online in terms of size, speed, you know, quality, that every, you know, the camera designers certainly, you know, take note and go, oh, look what we can do with this.
Yeah.
We can really innovate. And you know, the chip makers are all over these companies going, let me present you with our latest chips. What can you do with this? So I do think that, again, Red has always been one to design their processors and, you know, again, innovate to the point where their cameras are really, they're just wonderful cameras now. They're less computer and more camera. You know, so they've managed to listen to the world over the, you know, the decade or two that they've been listening. And you know, using a Red, using a, you know, a Sony, using a Panasonic, all of these have different kind of qualities. Sometimes you know you're going to be doing a lot of night work and you want very high ISO without a lot of noise, or maybe you want a certain kind of noise. Those dictate your, you know, when you do your testing on these things, this is what determines your choices. And inviting a, just because Nikon bought Red does not mean that they're going to discontinue all of the stuff that people like now, that we're thinking about.
That would be counterproductive. just imagine a scenario where Nikon goes, okay, we'll start over with Red. Let's stop selling everything.
And yeah,
that would not go over well.
No, and also we're talking here about the future of photography and the future of these innovative qualities. But it would be good to dig down and maybe listen to anyone from Nikon or Red talking about this, because I haven't heard any discussions kind of whether...
I am on the lookout for podcasts at this point. Yes, there will be some. There will be some for sure. So
yeah, and not just talking the company, you know, blur PR. I'm talking about like what the expectation of.
Did I tell you about the guy who was behind the Vision Pro, the Apple Vision Pro?
Because
that came out of the Verwana product, and then Apple bought them, and then it took, I don't know, 5-6 years for them to come up with a Vision Pro. And
almost 10 years, yeah.
And then this guy, who, again, they were a startup. They were acquired by Apple, including their technology, including part of their people, and they, and then he left Apple, and just recently did a podcast interview with the Voices of VR podcast, where he talked pretty like off the cuff about things that I'm not sure Apple wanted him to talk about. So culture clash was one big thing that he said. Yeah. But he stayed until almost the thing was out, I think until a year ago. So he led it to a certain level of finesse, and then he left, and now he is on a podcast. It's interesting. Culture clash is an interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, innovation, you know, coming from below up or top down is something that is always in play.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen in our lifetimes that most innovation comes out of the garages.
Yes.
Come small.
Yes.
And so when you have these big companies looking to do serious innovation, their best is to just invest and step back and be a part of it, you know what I mean, arm's length. I mean, it's like what NVIDIA is doing. This is a massive company, and they're making strategic little bets, not a lot of money, $10 million here, $15 million there, on some of these companies that invest in, say, AI usage of, you know, customer service. And they just, you know, they just kind of plant the seeds. But the companies they invest in are coming out of garages. They're very, bottom up. But they're stepping away, and they're not applying the corporate needs of the parent company into how the innovation is going to take place. And so there are smart ways of doing it and not. And maybe what we don't know is that the conditions of the deal are arm's length. In other words, we own you, but you go and run it as a separate company. Why do I not think that? But I don't know. Hope springs eternal.
Well, let's wait and see. All right. If anyone wants to discuss these things with us, you could join us on our Discord.
Yeah.
The link is in the show notes and on the screen.
Please
all right.
Correct all our misconceptions.
Right. Maybe we're completely off the mark here. Time for our picks. You brought us a photo magazine that I hadn't heard of.
Oh, it's terrific. This is, I subscribe to this. It's a
okay, let me read it. It says the monthly magazine dedicated to the finest landscape photography, insightful editorials, and fluid, clean design, carefully curated by the same team that brings you the medium format magazine. Uh-huh.
Again, a little something for inspiration. It's wonderful.
It's a subscription, $99 a year. And I think we get the covers of the issues. They are, look at that.
They are, yeah, this is a beautifully curated magazine. Yeah, just very well written. Their choices are spectacular. They're very consistent and they never disappoint. So, and I'm just saying this as someone who subscribes and enjoys it and is very inspired by it.
Awesome. Good one. I wanted to share a photographer who's unfortunately not alive anymore. He died. A Russian photographer called Dmitry Markov. And he was mostly known for his Instagram feed where he published his photos. And at one point, I think the story is his camera was stolen and he switched to an iPhone and then he pretty much stuck with the iPhone. So his photography, there's something about his photography that gives you a very clear indication that the picture is taken by a person, not by a camera, because it doesn't really matter. It doesn't seem to matter at all, because it's just the way he seems to have access to the people. Like, he gets photos that you wouldn't normally get, showing Russia and kind of behind the scenes Russia, stunning portraiture and situational photography. And he died too early, but his photography is still out there.
Yeah, it's really, this is wonderful stuff. And it shows you that great images often are the result of great access.
And in that case, 100%, he was embedded in communities and then he could get photos. Like, you need trust. As a photographer, you do need trust from others. Yeah. Otherwise, they won't let their guard down, and then
they'll look like every other snapshot. But these are stunning. They're obviously
amazing,
intimate.
Right?
Intimate. You know that there was a relationship between the photographer and the subject somewhere.
Yeah,
they're not just taken arm's length. They are there, like Jim Nachtwey's war photographs, where he says, if you're not making the right images, you're just not close enough. So to get close, you need trust. Yeah.
Very true.
And that's part of your personality, not the gear, not the film, not the lenses, not even the subject. That's your personality at basically allowing people to allow you in and being respectful.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Very true.
Good choice.
All right. I think that takes us to the end of this episode. Next time, Adrian will be back, and then we're going to bring another interesting photo. Again, you can join us on our Discord, tfttf.com/jointfop. Our photo storage is on tfttf.com/tfopphotos. And of course, we're on the social media, wherever you want to find us. All right.
So good luck, Nikon. Good luck, Red.
Yeah. We'll keep watching that topic for sure. All right. That was it. Thanks, everyone, for being here. We'll be back in a week. Everyone, take care. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Future of Photography. subscribe to the show wherever you get your other podcasts. Find the show notes and more information at thefutureofphotography.com.